Hi, you're listening to Magnifico Radio. I'm your host, Kate Black. Each week, I sit down with leaders, makers, and designers at the forefront of sustainability to discuss their journeys and motivation. Whether it's ethical fashion, clean beauty, or sustainable products, they're all doing something Magnifico. This show is made possible with support from our sponsors like The Detox Market, the most trusted source for clean beauty since 2010. The Detox Market is the go-to resource for those who believe in the power of pure products. Visit their store locations in Toronto and LA or online at thedetoxmarket.com.
You can have the most beautiful, most sustainable product in the entire world, but if you don't have an audience to launch it to, then it won't matter.
If you listen to this show often, you know how many career changers have gone on to start a social enterprise or sustainable business without seemingly any experience. But wouldn't it be great if you could learn everything you need to know from someone who's already been down the path? Well, if you're thinking of launching a sustainable fashion brand, then you'll love today's show. Shannon Lohr and her partner launched a sustainable fashion line with a Kickstarter campaign that exceeded its goal by over 300%. But once funded, they realized producing apparel wasn't as easy as they had thought. But that also became Shannon's aha moment. She thought, wouldn't it be great if there was an online accelerator program that helped sustainable apparel companies get from idea to launch? And Factory 45 was born. Welcome, Shannon.
Thanks so much, Kate, for having me.
So I've consolidated a lot of the backstory there. What happened after the Kickstarter?
So after the Kickstarter, we actually launched the highest funded fashion project in Kickstarter history at the time. This was also back in 2011. You know, now they're doing millions and millions. But at the time, $64,000 was a big goal that we exceeded our $20,000 goal. And we were able to quadruple our first production run. And so what we learned from that was that production rarely goes as planned, and we ran into a lot of sort of hiccups and challenges along the way because we were new to the industry. We didn't know how to walk the walk or talk the talk, and it really, you know, made things a little bit more difficult for us.
What was a typical hurdle that you came across that designers would still have trouble with today, or new designers or new fashion brands would have trouble with today?
So one of them was one of our materials, organic cotton drawstrings, were back ordered. And so we were on our production partner's calendar, ready to go with them, but we didn't have this one material that we needed. And if you don't have every single piece of your supply chain in your production partner's factory, then they won't start. They won't start making anything. So, and that's across the board. So that was one thing where that caused about a 3-month delay. Another was really not understanding the value of relationship building. We didn't know that how important it was to be at the end of our production line as we had garments coming off, you know, the supply chain, because really being there, being at the end of your line, being able to talk to your sewers, getting them invested in what you're creating is so important. And it kind of pains me now to even say that was a mistake because it seems so obvious. But when you're new in the industry, it's just one of those things that you don't really understand the value of until you're in it.
And that's what everybody says, especially when you're starting, you're doing your startup and you look back at all the mistakes that we make as we go on. Everybody's like, oh, my gosh, it's so simple. It was such an easy fix if I had only known.
Oh, totally.
Which is so kind of, you know, helpful to Factory 45. And I want to get there. But I also want to know, did you have a fashion background?
No, I was a journalism major in college, so I had no fashion background. My background was really, you know, like as a shopper. But when my co-founder and I came together, we just really wanted to start a business. We wanted to explore entrepreneurship. And this was sort of the thing we fell upon, which, you know, it's kind of like, oh, we picked one of the hardest companies to try to start. But I guess, you know, dive right in.
And that's actually, you bring up a really good point, because a lot of not guests on the show, because usually I put guests on the show who have reached some modicum of success, but a lot of startups in fashion think that fashion is going to be easy, and it just turns out to be really challenging. What are some of your ideas of like what the biggest hurdles are for people without a fashion background?
So I think, you know, for one thing, it's not even just that fashion is hard. It's starting a business is hard. When you are talking about a physical product, we live in this age of like digital products, you know, and like you can start a business online. You can start a service-based business. When you talk about fashion, even starting one garment, there are so many different pieces of the puzzle that come into play. You have your supply chain, but you also have your marketing. You have all of these relationships and other people that you're relying on to get your product made, your fabric supplier, you know, your notion supplier, your production partner. And so I think realizing that even if you do have a fashion background, even if you went to fashion school and you learned how to draft a pattern or, how to sew, it's really the business side of it that I think you don't know until you either, you know, take a program like Factory 45 or you just jump into it and kind of learn the hard way.
It's true. I use your story about the drawstring often, like kind of when I'm speaking to students or in my classes, because it tells a couple of pieces, right? It tells you that, you know, every piece counts. And so you have to, particularly when you're producing, as you said, a physical, something physical, you need to have everything kind of in line. But I also love it because you were so dedicated at the time to be fully sustainable, and you had your heart set on this one organic piece that prove problematic. And so I always think it's a really good lesson for fashion brands to not be so rigid in the expectation of what they're going to deliver as a product to a customer. Because in the end, did the customer know how special it was that the drawstring was organic, or did they only remember that the garment was 3 months late?
That's a good question. And luckily we did not poll our customers to ask them that. I will completely echo what you just said. We were purists. We wanted every part of the supply chain. You know, like even our buttons were natural wood, unfinished buttons. Everything we wanted to be perfectly sustainable. And I think when you're first starting out, that's great to have those goals, but there's no such thing as perfectly sustainable. If you're making something new, you are using energy. And so remembering that and knowing when to make, you know, consolations and just sort of give up on certain things in the end to get the product to your customer and to ask them for feedback and to, you know, to sort of get things moving, I think that's a really good point.
I remember the first time I heard Oscar Medovit, who's the designer for Osklen, say that his design philosophy was as sustainable as possible.
Yeah.
I kind of was taken aback. I was like, what? No, you could do better.
Yeah.
Well, of course, he has a whole institute and he's researching sustainability in Brazil and in the rainforest. And so he's doing as much as he can, but he really kind of reins it in by being as sustainable as possible. And now that I see it from that point of view and all the kind of hurdles that can help you get over, I think, oh, that's kind of the one of the keys that everybody who's starting a business should kind of remember. Just one foot in front of the other and as sustainable as possible.
I totally agree.
And so what other advice do you give what do you call the people in the incubator or in the accelerator?
I call them Factory 45ers.
Okay, so what else do you tell the 45ers?
I tell them, you know, a lot of times we can get so caught up in the supply chain, sourcing perfect fabric, you know, working on your spec sheet, completing your design, and we start to forget that there's this whole other element of starting a business around marketing. And if you can have the most beautiful, most sustainable product in the entire world, but if you don't have an audience to launch it to, then it won't matter. And so that's the number one thing is, at, you know, through the Factory 45 curriculum, we start with sourcing because that does take the longest. But pretty soon after that, we start talking about branding and building an audience, because that's something you can do as you're building your supply chain, as you're working on sort of the logistical operations side. You can start, you know, spreading the word on social media. You can start blogging. You can start guest posting. you can start connecting with other influencers in your network, and just building that early audience from the beginning is just going to save you so much time and such a headache and fear when you come to launch.
That's such great advice, because I think people think that, you know, followers and kind of the buzz just generates automatically. You launch a great product and then everybody shows up for the launch.
Mm-mm.
And they don't realize that as you're starting to formulate the idea is when you should be getting those social media handles and, you know, just starting to, even if it says that this is coming or stay tuned or something, that building an audience and building a following takes time.
Yeah, for us, when, you know, I was launching my clothing line with my co-founder, you know, as my first company, we blogged and grew our following on social media for a year and a half before we even had a product. And, you know, a lot of my Factory 45 groups will say, well, you know, I'm not going to launch until spring 2018. Like, isn't it too soon to start, like, talking about what I'm doing online? You know, what if things change? And my answer is always, it's never too soon. You take these potential customers through your journey. If things change, they want to hear about it. That's the behind-the-scenes stuff that people are interested in, and it's the stuff that gets them invested when you really, you know, when you are ready to launch.
I think people don't realize how long it takes to craft your story.
Yeah.
Right? So having time to reiterate it and to say it again, whether it's in a blog post or in an interview or, you know, like it takes a long time to really kind of find a story that fits you, like your favorite garment that you can wear around, and you can just drop your 30-second or your, you know, your 60-second pitch about what it is that you're launching really comfortably and easily. And all of that takes practice. I remember when I was launching, I was like tweaking a word here and a word there, and, you know, like just played with it for, yeah, probably 18 months.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you decided, okay, you know what, the world needs an accelerator program, all of this could be so much easier. How long did it take from that concept to actually bringing in your very first 45ers?
So I worked on a relatively quick timeline because I wanted to test the concept. I just wanted, like, proof that this is something that people actually needed. So I came up with the idea in February of 2014, and I had my first 10 people in April.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. And we kicked off the first program the very beginning of June. And so I just wanted to get 10 people for that first cohort and, like, use them sort of as my guinea pigs, which they were, so, you know, so great to do that. But yeah, that's 2 months.
And then how many cycles or how many cohorts have you done so far?
This is the fifth cycle.
How long does it typically take each cycle?
So every program is 6 months long, but now I only do one program a year.
Oh, okay. So five are down, you've honed it down, it's a six-month program, and it takes them from idea to launch.
Yes.
Okay. When we come back after this break, I want to dive into that a little bit more. Special thanks to our sponsor, Bank & Vogue. Bank & Vogue provides a full package of services tailored to the unique needs and wants of the apparel industry. Immersed in clothing collection and reselling for over 20 years, Bank & Vogue services, expertise, and new manufacturing facility can help streamline your brand's challenge with waste. Renowned for their innovative and relevant solutions to the crisis of stuff, visit bankvogue.com. You're listening to Magnifico Radio. I'm your host, Kate Black, and today I'm joined by Shannon Lohrer, the founder of Factory 45. So just before the break, we were talking about how many cohorts have already been through Factory 45. What have you learned? What's been, like, the greatest learning for you as the program creator?
Well, I think every year there's something new to learn, just because every year I get to go through this journey with all of these people for the first time that they're doing it. And so it sort of takes me back to when I was doing it myself, starting my own clothing company. And every time you learn, that's, I think, the beauty of, you know, having the space and the time that has passed. 3.5 years, I've been able to sort of see, okay, well, this launch strategy worked really well for this person because of this. And I can recommend that past those sort of tidbits and observations along to the current group. But I think, you know, the biggest learning experience for me has just been knowing that every entrepreneurial journey is different. And so for some people, it may take them 6 months to launch. For other people, it may take them 2 years to launch. And knowing that it's okay to have the journey that's for you and to kind of cater that entrepreneurial journey around your lifestyle. We can kind of get caught up in the world of entrepreneurship with Silicon Valley and venture capitalists and all this, like, oh, we have to do it so fast, get it to market, ship it. And it doesn't have to be that way. And so I think that's sort of the philosophy that I've absorbed and I try to pass on to my entrepreneurs is take the journey that's right for you.
And they also, they develop their own cohort, right?
Yeah.
They have a Facebook group where they hang out together because I think what other people don't realize is that entrepreneurialism is a challenge, but it's also really incredibly lonely.
Yeah.
And so to kind of start a business at the same time that other people or in the same industry or in the same kind of field is such a gift.
Yeah, that's been huge. And I think that's probably, you know, when I get feedback at the end of every cohort, one of the things that it comes up the most often is, oh my gosh, I'm so happy I had this community. It made all the difference. I didn't feel alone. I felt like I was in this with other people. It's like you said, that's huge.
And I don't want to put you on the spot, but I really do. What's been your most successful? Like, who's really kind of exceeded their expectations when they came out of the program? Like, who's had a really incredibly successful launch?
There's always like one per group that always stands out. But I guess for the sake of the question, Veta is probably the one that, you know, was the most successful in raising. They tripled their Kickstarter goal. So they raised almost $90,000.
And that's VETTA, right?
Yes, VETTA. They won the Saks Emerging Designer Showcase. They've been featured in Vogue, Who, What, Where. Like, they were darlings of the press during their Kickstarter and still are. And I'm just blown away by their photography, their branding, their messaging. I mean, they've done it all seamlessly.
Oh, I really loved I love the branding of Veta. I love the idea that it was just five pieces and it was all produced in America and all produced sustainably.
Yeah.
Like, it just had such a great message. And then the pictures were beautiful.
Yeah. And they were really smart about not just being another capsule wardrobe, even though this was sort of the beginning of that trend. Their messaging was five pieces that make up a month's worth of outfits. And I think just having that thoughtfulness and that sort of tweaking of the messaging really, you know, packed a lot of punch, especially with the press.
And so now that because you've been really focused on American production and kind of helping people in the American market do domestic production, do you have any plans to change that? Are you going to, you know, start to kind of broaden the focus?
Yes. So for the past 3.5 years, it's all been domestic U.S. and Canada-based entrepreneurs because that's simply, it's not because made in the USA is better. You know, it's not that. It's because all of my production partners and supplier resources were based here domestically. And I do believe in localization. But I have been working for the past year on expanding that network globally and, you know, vetting ethical suppliers and ethical factories across the world. And so I'm very happy to say that in September, I'll launch Factory 45 Global, which will be open to international entrepreneurs.
Wow. And it's not country specific? They can just come in from anywhere and they can produce anywhere?
Yes.
And are you focused on particular countries of production?
So we're focused on there's a lot of fair trade, natural dyeing, and organic cotton happening in India. So I've vetted a bunch of production partners in India. There's a few in Europe. There's a few in Asia. I've tried to get, you know, a few in every continent. There are a few in Africa, Central America, Australia. So there's a little, you know, spread out. So hopefully, you know, it's well-rounded enough to really provide a lot of options for people.
Is that because domestic manufacturing is still posing kind of a pricing issue for a lot of emerging brands?
I think it know if it's necessarily a pricing issue. I think, you know, now China and the U.S. are even in labor costs. I think for me, it's more the localization piece. For someone in, let's say, Australia, it doesn't necessarily make sense for them to be producing in the U.S. because that's, you know, quite a flight to get here to be on, you know, at the end of your production line. And so that's more what I've based it on. Is I think it's just so important to be in the factory and to be able to get there. And so opening up a global supply chain to international entrepreneurs hopefully will allow them to be closer to their production partner.
I see. So it's really to kind of cater to designers in countries that have production or are known for production and to help them navigate their own sustainable production in their backyard.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so fascinating. So which countries, so you've kind of mapped out India, which other ones are you feeling really confident about their availability and what they have to offer?
Actually, was pleasantly surprised with Ecuador. There's a lot going on in Ecuador and Peru in terms of fair trade and artisanal work. I don't, you know, coming from a domestic background, I don't know a lot about artisanal, you know, like partnering with artisans and sort of the handmade process. And so I've brought in experts from the industry to deal directly with artisans who are going to teach, you know, one of the lessons in the course. So I've tried to really, like, whatever my weaknesses were, depending on where the, you know, the country or who, where I was looking, I've tried to bring in those experts who can, you know, fill in those gaps. But so Central America, and then there are, a few fair trade factories in Asia and then in Europe and then a couple in Australia.
Wow. So the next cohort can be as global as they want.
Yes. Maybe we'll get someone from Antarctica.
And so is it still limited to 10?
No. So 10 was only the first cohort. Since then, the following year, it grew to two groups of 30. And then the following year, it grew to 80. And then this year, I also have 80.
And so 80 people, 80 designers from around the world now, starting in September, if you want to start a sustainable fashion business, you can sign up for Factory 45.
Yes, Factory 45 Global launches in September.
And does it have a different URL?
Yes, it's factory45global.co.
Okay, and that's the digits 4 and 5.
Yes.
Factory45global.co. I have some standard questions that I'm always curious about, and I wanted to kind of see what your answers were as well. If your life had a motto, what would it be?
Go through life with gratitude. I think that I try every night when I go to sleep, the last thing I do is think about all the things I'm thankful for. And I think that has made an immense impact on how fortunate I feel that I am and how, you know, how my business has grown, how my personal life has grown. So gratitude.
Especially for entrepreneurs. I do that as well because I find the days have so many ups and so many downs that it's really easy to only focus on, you know, what didn't happen or what you don't have. And then who or what inspires you?
In terms of the sustainable fashion industry, I'll look at the industry I'm in. What inspires me is the fact that I came into this industry in 2010 and watching the growth of the industry, like how many more people are talking about it, how many more people actually know what the word sustainable fashion means. There's been so much growth in just 10 years. And I think that as many times as I hear like, oh, well, sustainable fashion will never be mainstream or like sustainable fashion is too expensive, I still feel like there's so much to look forward to in this industry.
I agree. And then what's next on your bucket list? What are you working towards?
Well, Factory 45 Global is definitely the thing that I'm working towards from a career standpoint. I'm having a baby in January. That's a big bucket list thing.
Another little project.
Yeah, exactly.
And then how can people get in touch and how can people learn more?
So the best place to find me is either for social media, it's on Instagram. I'm at Factory45CO. And then my email list, if, you know, anyone's listening and you just really want to get started right now, I send out a lot of free advice via my email list every Wednesday. So just go to my website, factory45.co, and sign up. I'll send you a free manufacturing checklist right away. And then, you know, just weekly free advice that can be helpful for startup brands.
I'm on your mailing list as well, and I love it. I think it's always, you know, just little tidbits or little bits of advice from the road, basically. So things that maybe people are forgetting about, because lots of times when I'm reading the email, I have my own little aha moment. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I should keep doing X.
Oh, good.
So that's great. Well, Shannon, good luck with the global cohort. I'm sure it's going to be fully successful as the other ones have been. I look forward to seeing another kind of blast out brand like Veta. And thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Kate. It was really fun to talk to you.
And that's been another episode of Magnifico Radio. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to great podcasts. And if you like what you hear, give us a review or a rating. It will help Magnifico Radio rank higher amongst conventional fashion podcasts. And I really love to hear what you think. And want to learn more about ethical fashion and ethical designers? Sign up for our newsletter at magnifico.com. I'm Kate Black. Thanks for listening.